What did Jacobus ten Broeck mean by public welfare? By Ed Moorman. A photo appears at this point, the caption, "In this woodcut, two blind students of the Royal Institute for Blind Youth, the Parisian school for which Louis Braille was associated, are depicted operating a printing press. Printing was one of the professions blind people in France were often trained in during the early 19th century. A look back at Hope Deferred, Public Welfare and the Blind, by Jacobus ten Broeck and Floyd Matson, Berkeley, University of California Press, 1959. From the editor, with some regularity we spotlight books in the ten Broeck Library. Here is librarian Ed Moorman's description of another book in the collection. Ten Broeck and writes, Jacobus ten Broeck was a prolific writer, capable of expressing himself clearly and succinctly to very different audiences. To lawyers and law professors, he was the respected author of legal arguments that redefined the notion of rights and thus helped shape post-World War II social policy in the United States. To the agencies of the blindness establishment and the well-meaning professionals who work for them, he was a fearless and fearsome champion of those whose capacity for living independently was sometimes minimized or even denied. To members of the NFB, he was a bold orator, an inspirational speaker, and the front of ideas that would improve the circumstances of the blind in the U.S. and around the world. Among his speeches, law review articles, and textbook chapters, ten Broeck wrote three books that straddle the gap between the scholarly and the popular. Two of these deal with racial or ethnic groups who had been denied the rights and protections that most Americans take for granted. Anti-slavery origins of the 14th Amendment expanded on ten Broeck's earlier article, The Equal Protection of the Laws, and helped create a constitutional argument for the end of legal discrimination against African Americans. A few years later, prejudice, war, and the Constitution attacked the Supreme Court decision that supported the federal government's World War II internment of people, including American citizens, of Japanese descent. As a blind person, ten Broeck understood that the blind constitute a minority that experiences discrimination, much like racial minorities or people of unpopular national origin. Ten Broeck knew that the rights of a minority could be challenged on any number of bases, and he spoke up on behalf of any group that suffered discrimination. Race, national origin, and disability were three of the areas that he wrote about. A fourth was socioeconomic status. For more than a decade, he was a member and then chairman of the California State Board of Social Welfare, and his work in welfare law remains highly regarded more than 40 years after his death. As early as the 1940s, he argued that poor people, regardless of race, merited special protection because of systematic discrimination against the indigent in state laws. Many welfare rights advocates see his work as foundational, just as activists on behalf of the disabled recognize that ten Broeck's legal scholarship stands behind their work. Rights, Welfare, and the Blind. Ten Broeck and Matson open Hope Deferred, Public Welfare and the Blind, with a clear statement of their purpose and scope. This book presents a study of American social provisions for the welfare and security of the blind. As such, its boundaries are conservatively defined on both sides. It is neither an exhaustive survey of all aspects of public welfare, nor a comprehensive history of all activities for the blind. In other words, welfare and security are not the only concerns of blind people, far from it, but welfare and security are indeed concerns of the blind. Ten Broeck believed that this was a necessary aspect of the program of the organized blind. For the blind, especially those blind people who were denied the opportunity to live as equals, social provision of their welfare and security was their right as citizens. This position is evident in the original logo of the NFB, a concentric circle and triangle bearing three words, security, opportunity, and equality. Ten Broeck believed that security and opportunity for the blind are rights. The former may involve cash payments, the latter includes, among other things, rehabilitation and proper training in the skills needed to live independently. As for equality, a reciprocal relationship exists between good public welfare policy and equality for the blind. On the one hand, public policy must derive from the understanding that the blind are indeed the equals of other citizens. On the other hand, a measure of the success of public policy is the degree to which it guarantees equality to the blind in practice. In the introduction and part one, ten Broeck and Matson first point out that the blind can be found in any number of social roles, from criminal to judge, from blood donor to gambler, and that they have been the object of discrimination in each role. The authors then insist that the blind are no less mentally competent, emotionally stable, or socially adaptable than anyone else, and that the needs of the blind are those of ordinary people, caught at a physical and social disadvantage. Moving to the implications for public policy, ten Broeck and Matson describe those ideas and actions that meet the needs of the blind and those that don't. To meet the needs of the blind, public policy must presume the normality and equality of the blind, recognize the competency of the blind and their right to independence, create opportunity for the blind, and provide public services to the blind as a citizen's right. Public policy that fails to meet the needs of the blind presumes that the blind are abnormal and inferior, perpetuates dependence, creates barriers rather than opportunities, or provides services as a charity. For the blind, as for any group caught at a physical or social disadvantage, public policy must provide services as a right. Those services should encourage a sense of equality and independence. They must contribute to the ability of the blind to compete successfully on an equal basis with the general population. Security and opportunity, two aspects of the relationship between public welfare and the blind. Tenbrook's attachment to the original NFB logo and motto is evident in the remainder of the book. Part 2 is called Security, Part 3 is called Opportunity. The third key concept, equality, is present by implication throughout the work. After a historical review of public assistance from the Poor Laws of Elizabethan England through the enactment of the Social Security Amendments of 1956, Part 2 concludes with a polemic against the means test. Whether a grant is paid for by a worker's contributions through the payroll tax, as in Social Security Retirement and Social Security Disability Insurance, or drawn from a government's general funds, as in the program now known as Supplemental Security Income, Tenbrook and Mattson categorically reject the idea that agency workers should have anything to say about who receives aid, how much they get, or how they should spend it. The authors explain their reason for opposing the means test. The dignity and worth of the individuals are demeaned. Dignity requires that aid be expected and received as a matter of right, statutory, human, or natural, and not as a matter of administrative discretion, influenced by humanity, charity, approval, or other emotions. Dignity requires that psychological dependency should not become the price of economic aid, that privacy be respected, that adults be free to make their own decisions in respect to spending, living arrangement, and personal matters. Dignity requires that a standard and circumstance of living, not conspicuously different from the rest of the community, be attainable, and that the individual not be marked with other signs of his needy or special status. Part 3, Opportunity, is about employment, including self-employment, especially as provided for in the Randolph-Shepard Program, rehabilitation, and sheltered workshops. Tenbrook and Mattson address rehabilitation first, and they make their meaning clear. Vocational training is the keystone of the rehabilitation process. Well-organized and carefully planned training, moreover, has a definite therapeutic value in freeing the individual from his initial helplessness and giving him a sense of productivity and achievement. They continue, ultimately, of course, the rehabilitated worker must face the prospect of competition with the able-bodied, since the whole purpose of vocational rehabilitation is to fit the client for economic self-sufficiency into the mainstream of society. But it must be recognized that the training needs of the disabled are different from those of the able-bodied. And, after reviewing existing rehabilitation programs for the blind, they come to this conclusion. This account of the deficiencies of rehabilitation procedures for the blind strongly supports the need for instructors and counselors at every stage of the program who are themselves blind. It has been estimated that 85% to 90% of all mental stimuli come from sight, and certainly much of normal learning is a process of visual observation. The peculiar nature of the handicap of blindness, its extreme psychological impact and social isolation, can be fully understood only through the aid of other blind persons. Moreover, experience has amply demonstrated that sighted counselors, however well-meaning, tend generally to misconceive the nature of blindness and to underestimate the abilities of the blind. Reviewing developments in federal rehabilitation legislation during the 1950s, Tenbrook and Mattson point out that the agencies and organizations typically come out on one side of the debate, while trade unions and organizations of the disabled stand on the other. Tenbrook and Mattson preferred legislation that proposed an independent agency within the Department of Labor that had jurisdiction not only over rehabilitation but over other programs for the disabled, financial assistance to those deemed unrehabilitatable, application of minimum wage and other labor laws to sheltered workshops, a special federal fund that would mitigate problems of insuring businesses against injuries to disabled workers, and a division within the Federal Civil Service Commission tasked with recruiting and examining potential disabled employees. Some of these issues have since come to pass, but Federationists know that the NFB still has to fight for others. Turning to the vending stand program, Tenbrook and Mattson were dismayed by the way the original purposes of the Randolph-Shepard program could be distorted by the agencies. Rather than encouraging the independence of blind entrepreneurs, state agencies demeaned the blind by claiming, first, that only an exceptional few were capable of running the stands independently, and, second, that the general public was not comfortable with independent enterprises run by blind individuals. Part 3 concludes with a historical overview of sheltered workshops and their antecedents. Not surprisingly, Tenbrook and Mattson conclude that unenumerated or underpaid work for its own sake should never be confused with vocational rehabilitation. Alas, the organized blind are still fighting this battle. Conclusion. Jacobus Tenbrook exemplified a rare mixture of traits. On the one hand, he excelled as a teacher at the university level, and he published academic works for which he gained great renown. On the other hand, and at the same time, he was the organizer of a movement. Within that movement, he constantly struggled to remind his constituency of the need for independence in philosophy and action. In brief, Tenbrook was both a scholar and an activist. No publication demonstrates better the way the two fit together than Hope Deferred. Tenbrook wrote this book with Floyd Mattson just as the Civil War within the NFB was building to a crescendo. At the same time, with Tenbrook's encouragement, Kenneth Jernigan was asserting his own leadership. By the time Hope Deferred was published, Jernigan was in Iowa, reimagining what rehabilitation of the blind could be and making a Tenbrook-inspired state agency program a reality. Tenbrook and Jernigan differed in many ways, not the least of which was their orientation to national politics. But Jernigan understood the key lessons of Tenbrook's scholarship and activism and was thus able to build on the professor's activist legacy when death came far too early for the founding president of the NFB. Hope Deferred is available in Braille and as a talking book from the National Library Service.